So imagine wearing earbuds that are, constantly mapping your physical environment, but they promise they suffer from instant amnesia.
Right.
Or consider an American crypto venture that routes users directly through foreign AI models, despite some pretty glaring national security warnings.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Today, we're basically staring down this razor-thin line between breakneck technological progress and, well, the guardrails we are desperately trying to build around it. Welcome to this deep dive.
Glad to be here.
Our source material today is the Tech and Night Tech Digest from August 19, 2026. We are cutting through the noise of six breaking stories spanning artificial intelligence, wearable privacy, cybersecurity, and space exploration. My mission here is to make sure you walk away with the underlying mechanisms behind these headlines without, drowning in this feed of daily tech news.
I mean, the through line connecting all these seemingly disparate updates is really that friction between rapid deployment and systemic safety.
Right, exactly.
We're basically watching industries attempt to bolt the brakes onto the car while it's already barreling down the highway.
Well, let's start with a company trying to build those brakes into the actual physical chassis of the car. Apple just revealed their new camera-equipped AirPods.
Right.
And I think the immediate reaction anyone has when they hear the phrase camera earbuds is just sheer panic about covert recording.
Oh, absolutely.
Because nobody wants to be walking down the street wondering if the person next to them is like filming an undercover documentary.
Right. And Apple clearly anticipated that friction. I mean, largely because they watched the intense public backlash surrounding Meta's Ray-Ban smart glasses.
Which were explicitly designed for taking photos and video.
Exactly. So, based on code discovered in macOS 27 and some leaked promotional materials, Apple took a fundamentally different engineering path here.
Okay.
These new AirPods feature dual infrared cameras, one on each bud, but the hardware itself isn't built to capture standard photographs.
Wait, really? So no JPEGs?
No JPEGs. The cameras are specifically tuned for 3D spatial mapping and point cloud generation.
Okay, so they're feeding contextual awareness to Siri's visual intelligence framework, like allowing you to ask, what is the title of this book in front of me?
Precisely. The system maps the geometry of the book, identifies the text, delivers the audio response, and then it just discards the visual data.
Why?
It does not snap a picture and dump it into your iCloud camera roll. And to really reinforce this, they engineered physical hardware-level fail-safes.
Which is so important.
Yeah, there's a small LED activity indicator strategically placed to be visible from multiple angles, and it physically hardwires to the data transmission process.
So it lights up.
It illuminates the exact moment data is sent to Apple servers.
That's fascinating. The Digest also notes this incredibly specific user-centric detail, a hair-detected error.
Yeah, I love that
Right,
detail.
like if your hair obscures the lens, the system alerts you rather than just guessing at the visual data.
Yeah.
It's essentially like having a seeing eye dog that doesn't actually remember what it saw. It just, processes the moment to guide you.
That is a perfect analogy, yeah.
But wait, the processing power required to instantly parse a foreign street sign or analyze a complex book cover, that's massive.
Is.
If they aren't saving or transmitting images unnecessarily, how does the on-device processing actually handle complex visual queries instantly without just tanking the battery?
Well, so it relies on a highly specialized dual-layered architecture. The initial image analysis, so the basic object detection and point cloud mapping, that happens locally on the device's neural engine.
Yeah.
The local chip determines if it can answer the query itself. Now, if you ask a highly complex query that needs server-side compute, only the semantic data or encrypted temporary spatial fragments are transmitted.
Ah, and that is the exact moment the physical LED illuminates.
Exactly. And the ultimate hardware constraint is also the simplest. The moment you remove the AirPods from your ears, the camera system's power is mechanically severed.
Wow. So we see Apple tackling safety through immutable hardware constraints. You take the earbud out, the camera physically loses power.
Right.
But when you move from hardware to software, building those guardrails retroactively becomes incredibly messy. Which brings us to what OpenAI is attempting with teenagers.
Yeah, this is a huge shift. On August 18th, OpenAI launched a dedicated version of ChatGPT specifically architected for users aged 13 to 17.
Right.
And the defining feature of this release is something called study mode. It fundamentally alters how the large language model interacts with the user.
Okay. Also.
Instead of functioning as just a straight-up answer generation machine, study mode operates under strict system-level prompts to act more like a Socratic tutor.
I mean, but honestly, isn't this basically shutting the barn door after the horse is already bolted?
Yeah.
I mean, teens have been using this for years to write their essays and solve their math homework.
You're not wrong. The belated nature of this release is widely acknowledged in the sources. However, the mechanics of how they are trying to fix it are actually really significant.
Okay.
Under the hood, study mode alters the LLM's token prediction weights. When a teenager inputs a calculus problem, the AI's underlying instruction set explicitly forbids it from just outputting the final numerical solution.
Oh, wow. So what does it do?
It generates scaffolding questions. It forces the user to explain the concept, offering step-by-step guidance or alternative methodologies, rather than just handing over the completed assignment.
Okay, so they're actively trying to force behavioral friction into the software.
Exactly.
And the digest also outlines heavy parental controls and content restrictions, right? Like regarding self-harm and eating disorders.
Yeah, the moderation framework relies on a multi-tiered approach. First, there's a parental dashboard allowing guardians to set time limits and view usage summaries.
Right.
But, because teenagers could easily circumvent this by just lying about their birth year and creating a standard adult account.
Which they absolutely do.
Right. So OpenAI implemented an age prediction classifier.
Wait, how does an AI reliably guess someone's age just through text prompts?
It's pretty clever. The system analyzes prompt vocabulary, syntactic complexity, and the behavioral cadence of the queries.
Ah.
If the behavioral footprint strongly correlates with an adolescent user, the system automatically defaults the account into the restricted tier.
Okay.
And that activates advanced safety filters that block sexually explicit material and intervene on queries related to self-harm.
I mean, it's a noble effort to create a walled garden.
Yeah.
But when you step outside that tightly controlled environment into the broader digital ecosystem, specifically the major app stores and social platforms, that moderation model just collapses entirely.
It really does.
Yeah, according to a Wired investigation featured in the Digest, Meta was actively running advertisements for App Store applications designed to generate non-consensual, explicit deepfakes from ordinary photos.
Yeah, these are colloquially known as nudify apps.
Yeah.
And just to be completely objective about the facts reported here, one of the advertisements Meta approved and ran actually featured an AI-generated deepfake of a prominent U.S. politician. And Apple only removed these applications from their storefront after Wired directly contacted them for comment.
Wait, Apple's App Store review process is notoriously rigid,
Right.
and Meta's ad vetting algorithms scan millions of images a second. How do applications dedicated to non-consensual deepfakes bypass the automated defenses of $2 trillion tech giants?
Well, think of App Store moderation kind of like a digital immune system designed to catch viruses.
Okay.
The developers of these deepfake apps don't submit a virus. They submit a completely benign photo editing application.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so it passes the automated code review because the malicious functionality simply isn't there yet.
Right.
Once the app is approved and goes live on the storefront, the developers just flip a switch on their own external servers. The app interface updates dynamically via the web, unlocking the deepfake generation tools.
Oh, wow. So the platform's immune system is entirely blind to the bait and switch.
Completely blind.
It sounds like having a bouncer at a club who only kicks people out after they've already trashed the place and someone else calls the cops.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's like.
And the reliance on reactive moderation is just staggering. I mean, the Digest points out this wasn't an isolated oversight either.
No, not at all.
Prior to the Wired piece, an investigation by The Independent located 28 of these explicit generation apps freely available on Apple's platform. Tech Policy Press and CNBC notified Apple, which prompted a mass deletion.
Right.
Yet a follow-up review revealed several apps had evaded the sweep and remained active.
Because the algorithmic vetting is fundamentally failing against adversarial obfuscation. And the consequences here are severe.
Absolutely.
Deepfake technology is actively utilized to extort victims, orchestrate financial blackmail, and execute highly targeted reputation destruction.
Yeah.
Relying on investigative journalists to manually flag violations of a platform's own safety policies, it just demonstrates a gaping structural vulnerability in how consumer software is moderated.
Right, so we are seeing these major blind spots in consumer app ecosystems. But when you scale that blind spot up to the geopolitical level, it becomes a literal national security vulnerability.
Oh, definitely.
The Digest highlights a glaring contradiction right now at the intersection of cryptocurrency, artificial intelligence, and international policy.
Yep.
World Liberty Financial, which is a crypto venture backed by former President Trump, is currently collaborating with a Hong Kong-based company known as WorldClaw.
Yeah. And a statistical review of the WorldClaw platform reveals that out of the 90 AI models available for access, 43 of them, so roughly 48%, are developed by Chinese technology firms.
Wow.
This includes models from Alibaba, Baidu, and ZAI,
Okay.
and World Liberty Financial, which facilitates transactions using the USD1 stablecoin, claims they maintain no ownership or direct control over WorldClaw, though they have declined to disclose the specific financial architecture of the partnership.
Okay, let's look at this strictly through the lens of the factual contradiction here, impartially. The Trump administration routinely flagged Chinese technology companies as severe national security and intellectual property threats.
Right.
Yet, a venture linked to the former president is collaborating with a platform built heavily on those exact models.
Yes.
Even if they're just accessing these models, does the data still flow back to servers, subject to Chinese intelligence laws? I mean, it feels like just a remote software ping.
Well, an API ping is never just a ping. When you submit a prompt to a large language model, that data is processed and logged on the host servers.
Right.
The digest actually outlines five distinct security vectors regarding the specific architecture.
Okay, what are they?
First is data privacy. Because the host servers operate in jurisdictions subject to Chinese intelligence laws, the state has legal authority to compel access to those server logs.
Wow.
Any proprietary corporate data or personal information included in a user's prompt is legally exposed.
So if an American software developer pastes a block of code into the AI to find a bug, they just exported their company's proprietary architecture.
Exactly. Which leads directly to the second vector, intellectual property. Those user prompts can be ingested as training data to refine the foreign models, essentially absorbing Western IT to improve their own systems.
That is wild.
The third concern is backdoor risks. State actors could mandate subtle manipulations in the model's weights to return biased data or subtly flawed code to foreign users,
Oh, so it's an invisible supply chain vulnerability.
which is the fourth vector.
Yeah.
Integrating these models into American crypto financial workflows creates a functional dependency on potentially compromised
All
technology.
right.
And finally, there is strategic competition. Utilizing and paying for these models directly advances the technological and financial positioning of geopolitical rivals.
Yeah, it is just a perfect storm of digital contradictions. We have borders that don't actually exist, trying to regulate data that flows instantly. The software layer of our world is incredibly murky right now. And honestly, sometimes the most clarifying thing we can do is step away from all these earthly regulatory messes and look at the undeniable, unforgiving reality of physics.
I agree.
When you look at raw hardware engineering, the feedback loop isn't a policy debate, it's gravity. SpaceX just achieved something staggering with their Starship recovery.
They really did. Following 24 days adrift in the Indian Ocean, SpaceX successfully recovered their 52-meter Starship spacecraft, specifically designated as Ship 40.
52 meters.
Yeah, massive. And they managed to secure the structure and tow it hundreds of miles to Christmas Island near Australia.
Okay, to put this timeline in perspective, Elon Musk tweeted on August 7th that things were, quote, not looking good right now regarding the recovery effort. The fact that this 52-meter silo is intact is revolutionary when you look at its immediate predecessor. Ship 39 executed its landing burn over the ocean, but immediately toppled over and exploded, which, you know, was the expected outcome.
Yeah, it was.
But Ship 40 nailed the burn, splashed down, and stayed intact. It is the first Starship to actually survive a water landing.
And this is the ultimate validation of SpaceX's hardware-rich development philosophy. They engineer to test, fail, learn, and iterate rapidly. During atmospheric reentry, a spacecraft generates a bow shock of superheated plasma. Telemetry and onboard sensors provide vital numerical data on how the vehicle handles that heat, but telemetry cannot replace physical evidence.
It's the difference between reading a race car's diagnostic computer versus physically tearing down the engine block after a 24-hour race. The telemetry tells you the sensors failed. The twisted metal tells you exactly why.
And by recovering the physical hardware of Ship 40, engineers can analyze the thermal protection system down to the micrometer.
Wow.
They can measure the exact ablation rate of the hexagonal heat shield tiles. They can observe where superheated plasma may have seeped through microscopic seams to scorch the stainless steel hull beneath.
That's incredible.
Furthermore, the spacecraft survived 24 days of constant saltwater corrosion and wave action, providing unprecedented data on the structural integrity of the vehicle's welding and materials.
Yeah.
The data extracted from this physical teardown will likely condense their development timeline by months, accelerating the path to rapid reusability.
And the logistics of just moving it are wild. Securing a 52-meter spacecraft in international waters, coordinating with maritime authorities, and towing it to Christmas Island.
It's a huge operation.
Pushing the limits of materials in our atmosphere is a colossal achievement. But they aren't the only ones making history in space this week. Doing it in the vacuum of space, entirely by hand, requires a different kind of endurance altogether.
Definitely. On August 18th, 2026, the European Space Agency's Sophie Adonat became the first French woman to conduct a spacewalk at the International Space Station, executing the mission alongside NASA astronaut Anil Menon.
The visual details in the digest really highlight the meticulous coordination of these operations.
Right.
Menon functioned as crew member one, designated by the red stripes on his suit, while Adonat operated as crew member two in an unmarked suit.
Right.
And their objective was to replace a failed space-to-ground antenna that had ceased tracking NASA's data relay satellites months prior.
This was the 282nd extravehicular activity dedicated to station assembly, and the operation clocked in at 6 hours and 23 minutes.
Okay, but the digest notes that they successfully removed the old failed antenna and securely tied it down.
Yeah.
But they actually ran out of time to install the replacement, leaving the station without the new hardware for the time being.
They did, yeah.
So if they ran out of time and couldn't even install the new antenna, why is this mission still considered a massive success?
Yeah.
On Earth, unbolting an antenna is a morning project with a wrench.
Because on Earth, you aren't fighting your own clothes to survive.
Fair point.
A pressurized spacesuit, the extravehicular mobility unit, is essentially a human-shaped balloon rigid with pure oxygen.
Right.
Every single time Adonat or Menon closes their hand around a tool to loosen a bolt, they are physically fighting the internal pressure of their own glove.
Oh, man.
Imagine squeezing a stiff tennis ball thousands of times over 6 hours. The hand fatigue is immense.
Not to mention the environmental hazards up there.
Exactly. You're working in a microgravity vacuum while managing a complex web of tethers to ensure you don't float away.
You're experiencing massive thermal swings, moving from searing solar radiation to freezing orbital darkness every 45 minutes.
Wow.
Which actually changes the physical properties of the metal tools you're using. You cannot rush. A single slip or a torn glove is catastrophic.
Right.
So achieving the primary objective, safely removing the broken hardware without compromising the suit or the station, is a profound success. Running out of time isn't a failure. It's the calculated reality of human limits in an unforgiving environment.
It is a stunning display of international cooperation. NASA and the ESA coordinating seamlessly to maintain a laboratory orbiting the Earth at 17,000 miles per hour.
Truly.
You know, when we step back and look at the entirety of today's digest, the overarching theme really crystallizes. Technology is fundamentally neutral until we apply human intent.
Yes, absolutely.
We see Apple engineering proactive privacy constraints directly into the silicon of their AirPods. We see OpenAI attempting to weave Socratic behavioral nudges into the code of their language models. And we see the meticulous gravity-defying cooperation aboard the ISS. But on the flip side...
Exactly. On the flip side, we see what happens when human oversight fails. Algorithmic blind spots allow non-consensual deepfakes to thrive in consumer app stores. And geopolitical contradictions expose sensitive data through AI crypto ventures.
Right.
So I want you to look at the tools you rely on today. Understand the mechanisms running under the glass of your phone. Are you aware of where your data flows when you send an API ping? Are you demanding rigorous standards from the platforms that build the infrastructure of our daily lives?
That's the real question.
Because the future of this technology isn't predetermined. It is actively being written by what we choose to accept.
You know, it really makes you think. If SpaceX can manage the logistical miracle of recovering a 52-meter Starship from the middle of the Indian Ocean after 24 days, and international space agencies can flawlessly coordinate zero-gravity maintenance while dodging orbital darkness.
Yeah.
Why is it that the world's most valuable tech companies still rely on journalists to find and report harmful deepfake apps hiding in plain sight within their own digital storefronts?
That is exactly the defining question we need to be asking. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the mechanisms, and we will see you next time.